Coming up on this week's episode, we're talking Ten Hag, Arsenal versus Liverpool, a look at the bottom three, and a reactions to the Ballon d'Or. Liam's got the quiz this week. I'm on Who Am I duty, so let's get started. Hello, and welcome to a new episode of View From the Sideline podcast. It's Chris here. Liam's here as well. Hello, Liam.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm very good. Not better than last year.
Yeah, it's been a good start for you.
Yeah, the smile has remained on my face for some time now. So, yeah, I mean, it's all coming to plan, should we say. Everything seems to be coming together quite nicely at the moment. The first point we're actually going to talk about, we're going to talk about, obviously, Man United and Ten Hag. We actually play them on Sunday. So, I mean, if there was ever a chance of them picking up some points, it was probably going to be on Sunday.
Always the way when they get
done badly. Yeah.
You're done for.
So, yeah. But we'll, we'll get into that now. So, obviously, Man United have sacked Erik ten Hag. Seems like it's probably been a long time coming, and it's not the greatest point of the season to be sacking your manager either. 9 games gone, not even at Christmas yet, not many managers out there currently, and yeah, it's hard to see where they go from here. Obviously, a lot of managers being linked to them, one of them Gareth Southgate, which kind of feels strange to me, but I think the favourite is the Sporting Lisbon manager, I think. So we'll have to wait and see on that. But he's probably been sacked for the right reasons. I think when you look at their position in the league at the moment, it's not good, is it? No. And the amount of goals that they've scored, I mean, other than Crystal Palace and Southampton, they've scored the least amount of goals in the league. I guess the question is, had he already lost the dressing room sort of 4 or 5 weeks ago? And should have this been a conversation that they had over the summer?
Yeah, I think you look at last year, I don't think anything has necessarily got worse from the last 3-4 months of the season, last season. The only thing that kept him in the job, as everybody says, is the FA Cup. So,
100%. And I think even then, I think people still thought,
yeah, people
might get sacked.
Yeah, and it just wasn't the attacking football that Ajax were playing under him. I think they kind of expected a different style. I don't know whether it's a case of he didn't feel confident that they could match his sort of Ajax way of playing, or whether the players just didn't buy into it. Obviously, he tried to bring in ex-Ajax players to maybe make it work, so it kind of suggested it.
Yeah.
It was the other larger characters in the dressing room that were stopping that kind of football from playing. But I do sort of feel a little bit sorry for him because, you know, he did well at Ajax. He got them to the Champions League semi-final, and they were a young team as well. You know, he did build a really solid foundation. Obviously, he had a bit of help from the academy with all those players that were coming through at the time. But, yeah, for whatever reason, Man United just doesn't suit him. But it hasn't suited any manager since Ferguson, so he's not on his own.
Yeah, I think...
above him that is causing these problems. I don't think it's all solved by the manager being sacked.
No, and I think there's always going to be heavy comparisons to, obviously, you know, how they used to be, shall we say. But I think you've got to look at sort of the transfers as well that they've brought in. I mean, the Xerxes transfer seemed a bit rushed.
Yeah.
I think Højlund got injured and they felt that they needed another striker, but
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
he hasn't really provided much going forward.
No.
You even look back to last year, obviously signing Mason Mount. I mean,
yeah,
That's just been a disaster, really, hasn't it? When he was injured for the majority of the season last season. He's played a handful of games this season, but he's injured again, so.
He was one of the first names on the England team sheet 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Obviously, didn't feel like he was going to progress at Chelsea. You know, maybe it was a case, you know, Chelsea didn't get European football on, in the year that he left. He maybe wanted to sort of keep in those sort of levels, but it's just not worked out for him.
No.
It hasn't. No. Yeah. He's. I don't know.
When you look at sort of the one of the key players, I think he saw was McTominay, because to me, I don't understand if it was a him thing or if it was a club thing. But to me, last season, it always seemed that when they needed a result, he was the one that they sort of relied upon, and he scored quite a few goals from, like for the position he played.
Yeah,
last season
he started.
Trouble.
Started his really well, and you do kind of look at that and you think, actually, the players that have left have actually done. I mean, Sancho, all right, he's not played every week for Chelsea, but
he's
done pretty well. McTominay's doing really well in Serie A. Kind of think, well, there's something wrong at the club. Obviously, the owners think it's the manager. I don't think it is, because I think it's been going on since a long time before Ten Hag came in, but there's obviously something just not clicking, and they don't feel like they can play with full confidence or something like that, and they get that move away, and then all of a sudden they change players again. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do next. I don't envy anybody taking that role, really, because you're still getting compared. What are we now, 11 years since Ferguson's last game, and you're still going to be compared to and they need to do something to stop that happening quite quickly. You've got to think, if someone like Mourinho couldn't do it, but let's be honest, his record at United wasn't bad. You know, it was their highest finish since Fergie.
Yeah.
He's not going to get that sort of reputation and take it in another direction, and I don't think anyone is anytime soon. It's going to take quite a rebuild to create a sort of new, improved Manchester United.
I just, like I said earlier, it's a strange time to obviously sack a manager sort of before Christmas. Normally they get given until like sort of around Christmas or just after Christmas.
Yeah.
When managers start becoming available, and I think they would have had more, there was more crop of managers sort of over the summer.
Yeah.
And you've got to think maybe someone like Tuchel, maybe.
Yeah.
Had he not taken the England job.
Yeah.
I think he would have definitely been one of the favourites there. And it makes you wonder why they didn't maybe pull the trigger over the summer. If they already had doubts in their mind that maybe sort of, you know.
Yeah.
Nine, ten games into the season, if it still wasn't working, that they were going to change it, it just doesn't really make much sense. Now, again, I don't think it makes much sense bringing in a manager now anyway. I think they'd be best off sticking Van Nistelrooy in for a couple of months, wait until maybe January, see if anyone else has become available. Because I think they need someone with Premier League experience. I think the Brentford manager, I think he is on the list, I think, of, you know, candidates. And I think he'd do a good job there, but I don't know, would he leave what he's got for that? I think taking it is a huge risk
for a manager.
It's a huge risk.
Yeah, it's a big reputation damager if you get it wrong. And so far since Fergie has. Some have come back a little bit, like Moyes did well at West Ham. Obviously, his reputation sort of came back a little bit. But, you know, Van Gaal, Ranić, although he's doing okay with Austria. But, their sort of reputation.
I don't know what will happen with Ten Hag, because he's... I don't think it'll be Premier League for him.
I think he'll be back.
Holland
or in Europe. Yeah. Yeah, I think... I think think so. I mean, Ajax aren't having a, they're having a better year so far than they did last year. But I can see him getting a job in, I can see, you'll still see him getting a job in one of the top leagues in Europe.
Yeah.
For a huge, huge club, but I could certainly see a job in like Serie A or something like that coming available and it'd be considered. But yeah, I think the difficulty is for whoever comes in, and we've said it before on this podcast, Chris, you either say it's a complete reset and we're going back to the old Man United way, we're going to build through the academy, we're going to get players that are sort of at the moment, you know, like 13, 14 years old, we're going to build them up, and then by the time they're sort of 18, 19, in 4 years' time, we'll have a team of Kobbie Mainoos coming through, which is essentially what Fergie did. But again, I think people forget he didn't win anything for his first, I think, 4 or 5 years as Man United manager. It was only when the Premier League came in, and he'd been in charge for quite some time, and he'd nearly been sacked as well. And then he obviously managed to build a team around that sort of class of 92.
Mm.
So the new Man United manager has to come in and either say, well, we're going to do away with that completely and I'm going to build a squad of people that I'm going to buy, or they're going to say, no, we're going back to those roots. Because the mix of the two, which they've been trying to do, I think, since, well, for the last 10 years or so, it's just obviously not working. And the United fans, you know, they liked Mainoo coming through. I know it's gone against Rashford a little bit, but when he first came through, you know, he was the new like, fan favourite. So I just think a little bit of patience is required. They need to, again, assess they are where they are. I think they're better than 14th, obviously, but if they want to take a few years of finishing, like Chelsea have kind of done, you know, a few years where they're sort of 8th around that area, and then build and make an attack to win some trophies. And I think Chelsea will be competing for trophies this season. If it's not the Conference League, then it'll be something else. But I just think they just need to be a bit more realistic with where they are. Throwing money at it doesn't seem to have done the job. So you might as well just rely on that kind of bring those players through and, yeah, see what happens.
Yeah, the transfers this season over the summer, it hasn't helped at all, has it? You know, they brought in De Ligt to try and bolster the defence, but, I mean, they've kept a couple of clean sheets and, you know, they've only conceded 11, which isn't too bad. But it seems to be going forward more where they are struggling quite a lot. And I don't think at that time before he was sacked, he knew who his best 11 was. And he had, you know, he's got players like Garnacho out wide who, you know, he's played quite well, to be fair. Yeah. I think under Ten Hag, I think Garnacho is probably one of the players that's probably flourished.
Yeah, I think he actually played well at the weekend as well.
Yeah, and I just...
one of the better players.
Like you said, I think whoever it is comes in and, you know, they have to make a quick decision on going forward. What is the plan? You know, is the plan, like you said, to, you know, make some of these academy players, you know, into the first team, or, you know, a complete reset with the squad? But like you said, I throw money at it, hasn't worked up until now. And to be fair, you know, when Fergie was around, he didn't really, you know, he wasn't one for splashing huge amounts of money on players.
No,
so
I think the other problem they have now, I know that the sort of class of 92 came through when United hadn't won anything, but players still kept coming through that conveyor belt. You look at Dan Fletcher and John O'Shea's, Wes Brown, you know, people that played a lot for Man United were still coming through, but now there's huge competition in that area for where kids are going to go and play their football. Before it, but for a long period, really, it was very much, if you're from that part of the country and Man United came calling, you were going to the Man United Academy. Now, a lot more choice. You know, there's a lot of people, like Phil Foden coming through Man City, has shown it can be done at a club that still spends hundreds of millions of pounds. So, you know, it's not a done deal anymore. And I think then if they're going to go back to that route, they need to do it quickly, or there's going to come a point where sort of kids coming through at the ages of like 12 or 13 are going to go, well, no, why would I go to Man United? They're mid-table.
Yeah.
They never win anything. No, I'm going to go to a team that wins something. So, yeah, they need to...
That's the other issue as well. Whoever comes in, you think that they're going to have their own style of play, and so the players are going to have to pick it up pretty quickly. Because, yeah. I mean, if you take the job on this season, I think you're almost going to have to, you know, say to, you know, the people hiring you, you know, I'm coming in, but you can't sack me come the end of the season if we're 11th.
Yeah.
Because to be fair, I haven't really had a fair shot, and I took it over, you know, at a stage where, you know, pretty much at the lowest they can get, really. I mean, it's only going to take, you know, if Chelsea do beat them on Sunday and, you know, a couple of the other teams win below them, it's not going to look great. But I would say whoever's coming in, I think they're just going to have to fight it out, scrap it out this season. Almost like, you know, if we finish in top half, that's a very good season. You know, yeah. If we finish, you know, anywhere between 11th and 14th where they are now, you know, we've stabilised it. Now let's move on over the summer.
I don't know. I might be proved wrong. But I don't think Ruben Amorim is the right person to...
Not right now, he's not. They need
experience.
They just need someone with experience in the Premier League. But I just don't think at this present time there's anyone out there that could come in and do it. And I don't think there's many managers in the Premier League right now that would give up what they've got to do that job. I just think I think it's a huge, huge risk for any manager in the Premier League currently to take it on.
I would like to point out that Paul Scholes saying that if Man United came knocking for Unai Emery, he would absolutely walk to Manchester. No, Paul. No, he wouldn't. I just wanted to bring that up and clarify.
I think he'd be walking away laughing on the phone.
No way.
As he's walking into the Villa training ground.
Exactly.
I don't.
A horrendous take on TalkSport. I think it's ready today or yesterday.
This is the issue that they have. Is a lot of these ex-Man United players think that they know best, and they, because their head is so clouded by how it used to be, they think that Man United can chuck money at anyone and they would join. And yeah. That's not just managers. That's players as well. I don't know why you would say that, because there's not a cat in hell's chance that he would give up the job that he's got now, where he's going strong in the league and in the Champions League at the same time to take that job. That's just silly. I personally think the only player that played for Man United that comes close to getting that job is Michael Carrick. And even that, I would say, is an outside chance.
Yeah. He did start well at Borough, didn't he? But it kind of tailed off.
It's pretty much fallen off the rails now.
Yeah.
But I don't... Yeah. I think, and this isn't a dig at Fergie, he's leaving his role, isn't he, Fergie? Leaving his role. So he's not going to have anything, I guess, to do with the club. And that may be what the club need.
Yeah, a clean break.
They just need a clean break. And, you know, what he's done for that club is it probably won't ever be replicated in my lifetime. So you have to think that maybe by giving him a slight nudge in the fact that, you know, you can retire now. Because, I don't know if you noticed, but whenever Man United are playing at home, every time without fail, Fergie's on the TV.
Oh, always, yeah.
They'll pan to him in the crowd. Yeah. And I think maybe for them, it's best to try and get away from that, because it is just a constant reminder to people that he, you know, he is their most successful manager ever.
Yeah.
And it's literally every home game that they're on TV. He is 100% on the TV at some point. And it will say Sir Alex Ferguson, and then underneath, like, one stupid amount of Premier League titles with Man United. So, I think Man United fans may disagree with that comment, but I just think that if he's going, the last thing that they need to do is bring in another ex-player that just reminds them of, it's like with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It's like when you think of him and you think of Man United, the only thing I don't think of him managing Man United. I think of him scoring in the Champions League final.
Yeah.
It's a bit like Chelsea with Frank Lampard. It didn't work out.
Exactly.
And 98% of the time when I think of Frank Lampard, I don't think of him being the manager of Chelsea. You know, I think of him, you know, scoring lots of penalties for Chelsea and scoring lots of goals, you know. So, I think the last thing they need to do is bring in an ex-player. I think, like you said, I think it has to be a total reset, and the culture has to change. A bit of investment from the owners, I think, wouldn't go amiss. Not necessarily on players, then, you know.
Just modernising the club, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think right now, I think just get someone in just to see it through, even if it has to be seen through right to the end of the season, and they wait, and they just be patient about it. I just don't see it, like you said. I don't think this guy from Sporting, I don't think that's a great idea right now. I think Graham Pott, see, again, I'm not sure, because I don't think he's... I think Eddie Howe would be personally a good choice for Man United. And to be fair, I don't think he's far from being sacked himself. So
there's something funny going on at Newcastle. There's something behind the scenes, I think, you know, with some of the shareholders.
Yeah.
And the shares, and no one knowing actually who owns the club and stuff like that. So I could.
Yeah, because I think that if Chelsea beat him tomorrow night and knock him out of the cup, I think that could be it, because I think they might see tomorrow night as probably a chance. So maybe they wait out. Maybe they just wait out. But I think if I was Man United, I think it doesn't seem like that they had a plan of when Ten Hag was sacked. It's not like they announced the manager within 24 hours, 48 hours. Kind of makes me think that it was a spur of the moment thing that they said, right, that's enough. Yeah. Enough's enough. And we'll see where we can take it from there. But I don't know. We've probably spoken a lot about Ten Hag right now. It's probably the most we've ever spoken about Man United as well, to be fair. But yeah, we'll see what happens with them. But we're going to look at one of the fixtures from the weekend, the Arsenal-Liverpool game. And it was a very good game. I thought it was very enjoyable for a neutral to watch a game like that. I mean, there's something about Liverpool. Just this season.
Yeah. They're hard to beat, aren't they?
They are. And they are looking really, really good under Mr. Slot. And I think some people probably thought that they might struggle this season. But I personally think they've been playing a lot better than Man City. And to think that Man City haven't been playing that well and are still top, I mean, that's probably saying something about them as a club. But
worries me a bit.
I've seen the games that I have seen of Liverpool this season. I've been quite impressed. But yeah, it was a good game. I thought Saka had a really good game actually for Arsenal as well.
Considering he was meant to be injured.
Yeah, I didn't think he was actually going to be playing.
I do think you're right, though, but you look at the way that Liverpool did this, and they might have had their hand forced a little bit by Klopp.
Yeah.
Rising with the announcement, what was it, midway through last season, I want to say?
That was another weird one, wasn't it? He was like saying, I am leaving, but I am going to continue to manage for another 5 months, which, you know, is fair play to him. But it gave them time. It gave them time. And there's part of me that thinks that Klopp was probably part of the process of finding another manager.
Yeah, and I'd hope that he was. I think he's probably earned the right, you know, for having a say in it. Because, you know, what he's obviously won for Liverpool. But, you know, but I don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but he had those few months. Yes, obviously they still wanted to win things in his last season and it didn't quite work out, but he had those few months. Had those few months to get to know slot style.
Yeah, gave them time to scout.
Exactly. Scout.
Yeah.
So I think they were maybe a bit more prepared and maybe were a few months ahead of any just sort of new manager being sprung on them. So I think that was quite well managed by Liverpool. And I think what he's done quite well, they weren't really busy in the transfer window, Liverpool, were they?
Oh, no, they didn't. They
didn't really hire anyone, but they kept the core of that squad. And I think what he's done quite well, certainly for the start of this season, the squad players last year that didn't get too much game time have become quite important. The last few times I've seen Liverpool this season, Curtis Jones has really impressed me, and he's kind of halted his progression a little bit, I thought, at Liverpool. So he sort of came on, you know, first early in his career at sort of 19, 20 years old, and he thought he's going to be, you know, top dog for Liverpool. And it just, I don't know whether he had a few injuries or something like that, but it just didn't work. This season, he's starting to look like the player that I thought we were going to get. And he's kind of changed his role a little bit central now, rather than playing out wide. And I think he's been quite important for them this year. Gravenberch, I think, has been really important for them this year. And he didn't get that much game time last year. And what he did get, I think he was maybe not quite up to speed with the Premier League. But now that he's starting to look like a really good player in the centre midfield. And that was the area that I think they were lacking last season.
Yeah.
They've got, right, like the three up front, absolutely fine. I know Darwin has his critics, but I quite like him. He's a good size. He's strong. He's got pace. Sometimes, yes, his finishing does leave a bit to be desired, but I think he's one of the unluckiest strikers in the Premier League. He just always seems to hit the post, hit the bar, one off the line,
and
seems to score. But obviously with Salah, it doesn't really matter that much because you've got someone who can score 25 goals a season alongside you. But I think they're looking really strong this year because I kind of expected them to go out and straight up buy a top-class centre midfielder. I think they, although Henderson's obviously getting on a bit, they kind of missed someone with maybe his personality. But I look at them now and I think, no, they probably did have it there. It was just a case of bringing them out their shell a little bit. So, yeah, I've been quite interested watching them so far. They've looked relatively solid at the back, although there was a couple of moments against Arsenal where they did look a little bit ragged.
Well, this is what I was going to say, because against when they played Chelsea a couple of weekends ago, it almost felt that Van Dijk lost a bit of pace. I don't know whether it was because Jackson is quite quick, but he was, when they were, you know, sort of in a race together, I mean, Jackson was winning it every time. And even for the goal, you know, he managed to get away from one of the defenders as well. But
yeah,
I thought Van Dijk played actually quite well on Sunday. So
yeah,
after I seen it, I thought, oh, well, yeah, maybe he just had an off day. But I mean, they still beat Chelsea. But I mean, he's 33 now, Van Dijk.
Yeah.
Still probably their best defender. But you know, there is going to be a time in the next year or so where, you know, they are going to have to bring another defender through.
Yeah.
And to me, I've seen Kwanzaa.
Yeah.
I don't think he's probably quite ready yet.
I don't think he's, some games where I've seen him and I've thought, yeah, he's not far off, but then there's been other games, I can't remember who the game was against last season, but
yeah. I mean, they got Gomez as well, but he,
I think he's on his way out.
I'm not sure about it. Sometimes I can see him and I think he's really good, but that's mostly when he's playing at right back. Yeah. Not when he's playing at left back.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have to spend money, I think, to bring in someone at centre back. And it probably, if Van Dijk's there again next season, it'd probably be a good idea to get someone over the summer, bring someone in.
Yeah.
You know, and have Van Dijk, you know, make them learn off of Van Dijk, basically.
Yeah.
The only thing about Arsenal is defensively they are very good. In the midfield, again, very good. Wingers, very good.
Yeah.
It's just that final piece of the jigsaw, still for me, is a striker.
Yeah.
That's going to get you 20 plus goals
a
season. You know, Liverpool have got Salah. Man City have got Haaland.
Yeah.
Arsenal just haven't got that 20-goal striker. I mean, Havertz, since he's left Chelsea and joined Arsenal, he's done very well.
Yeah.
But he's not going to get any of those 20 goals. So they still are, I think, one piece of the puzzle away from actually making, you know, the Premier League, getting the Premier League title.
A couple of moments. They bought Gabriel Jesus on 10. And it was really the first time in the game they played with an out-and-out striker, because to me, Havertz isn't really a proper striker. He's kind sort of been lumped up there. But they brought Jesus on, and there was a few moments where he's so frustrating to watch, because he does the right things in terms of movement and then the wrong things in terms of decision-making.
Yeah.
A few moments where he managed to work a little bit of space and you're thinking, just play the right pass or take the right shot. And it just seems to make that wrong call every time. There was one moment in particular towards the end, I think it actually made the highlights of Match of the Day, where he was, I don't know, sort of on the edge of the area maybe, and he took a shot where it probably would have been better off to pass, and he just put it kind of straight down the throat of Kelleher in goal. And I was just thinking, that is a striker really lacking on confidence. That's someone who's
But I don't, yeah. I don't think he's an out-and-out striker. I don't think he can play. Well, I think he can play maybe out wide, but when he was at Man City, it was very rarely that he actually came on as the out-and-out striker. Yeah. And I don't, like you said, like sometimes when he's got the ball at his feet, he can do something with it. But this is probably going to annoy some Arsenal fans, but he's the Brazilian Timo Werner. I mean, he'll work his socks off, and there'll be a few glimpses of, well, word, yeah, he's got something, but then when he's in front of goal, it's not there.
Yeah. I think you're right, you know, solid at the back now. They've got a good...
Yeah, they've got the partnership there, haven't they? They've got the partnership at the back that, I mean, you could probably say it's probably the best two central defenders in the league at the moment. So, other than maybe Van Dijk, but it's just that. And to me, it seems like it's so obvious that they need an out and out striker, but it feels like I've been saying that for like 2 years now.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
And it just doesn't seem like that they've resolved it, or even tried to resolve it, really.
No.
Because I don't think that they were heavily linked for it, really, with anyone over the summer, striker-wise, from what I remember.
No, I think there were some minor links with Watkins at one point, but I think that's just because in an interview a long time ago he said he was an Arsenal fan. So, yeah, they always sort of... Whenever a footballer says they're a fan of a club, people think he's automatically going to join them. I think it feels like we are going in circles with them. That is the only thing I will say with Arsenal now, and again, I think I might have said it before. I remember watching them under Wenger. I was lucky enough to go and see Villa against Arsenal when, like, Dennis Bergkamp and Mark Overmars were playing that day. Adams was playing that day. Like, you know, the real, like, late Arsenal squad. And they were playing just some lovely football to watch. Villa somehow ended up winning that game, but Arsenal still played well. You know, they played the Arsenal Wenger way. That is so long gone now. And I know maybe not moving on, and maybe Arsenal have moved on from Wenger, but the last few times I've watched them, I've just thought, if Arsene Wenger was watching this, he'd be having kittens. Like, it's the total polar opposite of how he wanted his team to play the game. You know, it was all about football. Now it's all about the dark arts and things like that, and they are getting a bit of a reputation. You know, they've had 3 red cards this year, and I know all Arsenal fans have said none of them are warranted, but personally, I think there's a good case for all of them. I don't... They're not the only team that is guilty of it, by any means. I mean, we've got Emi Martinez in goal, for Christ's sake, so, yeah, I know all about that. You know, I watch it every week with him in a Villa shirt. But, yeah, it just frustrates me watching them every single time. I've got a real soft spot for Arsenal. They were kind of a second team because of how they used to play. You know, I loved Thierry Henry, I loved Dennis Bergkamp and Patrick Vieira and people like that. And now it just seems like, I just really don't like watching them. They're just a bit, you know, they just try and bully people. And again, even this weekend, they had that goal ruled out with a couple of minutes to go. And in the build-up, there was about 3 fouls in there and they were all complaining. And I was like, you've got nothing to moan about. There are so many clear... There's a handball in there as well, I think. And, I just don't... They're surrounding the ref and things like that. And, it's the Bruno Fernandes-ness of it all that I just really don't like at the moment. But, like I say, they're not the only team that's guilty of it. But, I just remember Arsenal just not being about that. And, it just seems a bit of a shame at the minute. But they are still a very, very good side. When they've got the ball, they're still quite easy to watch. It's just the off-the-ball antics, I think, that's getting a bit frustrating. So.
Okay, we'll move on now to the bottom 3. None of them have won a game yet this season. So you got Southampton in 20th, Wolves 19th, Ipswich 18th, Southampton not scoring enough, Wolves conceding too much, and Ipswich have just kind of trotting along a little bit in 18th. But I've got to eat my hat here because I said Forest would be in that bottom. And they're far from it at the moment. So, I think Wolves are probably the one team there that I think probably I thought might struggle, but not as bad as what they have struggled so far. I mean, they conceded 6 at home to Chelsea, and that's never good. Conceding that many, especially at home and especially to Chelsea. Ipswich, though, they went through a phase. I think they drew 4. Was it 4 in a row they drew? One of them was against Villa, and Brighton, I think, were the other one as well. They did well, but I think since then they've kind of fallen off a little bit. And at the weekend, I think kind of summed it up over the last sort of couple of weeks. 2-0 up, and then they went 3-2 down, had someone sent off, scored late on, and then conceded in the 96th minute. So, I mean. I look at those bottom 3 teams, and to be fair, you can't really argue why they're down there. None of them have won a game. Yeah. I mean, Palace and Everton and Leicester are just above them. I mean, Everton and Leicester are 5 clear. Palace, I thought, would do better than, how they're doing at the moment. They're 6th. I think the shock went down there is probably what, and they conceded 25 goals, which is terrible time of the season.
Like, you mentioned, obviously, they conceded 6 against Chelsea. I think the only team really at the bottom that I think every week has kind of actually been in a game, like maybe not every week, because I know they've lost a couple of games by more than a goal. But when we played Ipswich, they did give us a really good game, to be fair. It wasn't like we were all over them and just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. It ended 2-2, and it could have been 3-3, 4-4. Yeah, there were chances at both ends. It was real end-to-end. They played good counter-attacking football, and they deserved to get a draw in the end. We looked a little bit leggy. It wasn't the best Villa performance, but we were by no means awful. But they stayed in the game, and I think even... I know it's going to be a bit of a punch in the gut from being 2-0 up and then losing the game this weekend. But they've been competitive, whereas I think Southampton... especially, and in some games, Wolves, they just haven't. They've just capitulated a little bit. They've just not looked. I know Southampton, they've played pretty well against Man City at the weekend. You know, I know they lost, but to lose 1-0 to Man City at Man City is not an embarrassment at all. I triple captained Haaland in my fantasy Premier League. How confident I was in the Southampton getting anything this weekend. But, you know, they have struggled. I think we said at on the start of the podcast a few weeks ago, it's probably a bit too soon for them to come up. They obviously got up through the playoffs, but I know they bought a few players, but there was already rumours of discontent about the manager and his style, and you know, he sort of by the way that he wants to play, and it doesn't really work in the Premier League unless you've got those world class players that could pass it off, you know, like Liverpool City have. And Southampton just don't have that. And it seems, I watched the Bournemouth-Southampton game a couple of weeks ago. They were just making so many mistakes. They were just making problems for themselves. I think all of the goals for Bournemouth came from their own mistakes.
Yeah.
It just keeps happening every single game, and something's got to change.
I think he will probably have until Christmas.
Yeah.
But I think if it doesn't pick up soon, I think, you know, he is going to have a hard time. They're actually winning tonight in the EFL.
I think the irony is as well, if Ipswich had come up and they'd won a few games, McKenna would be in with a shout for Man United manager. So maybe there's some kind of secret agenda in Ipswich to keep Kieran McKenna in that dugout. And they knew that Ten Hag was going to get sacked, so they're going to play poor for the first part of the season, wait for Man United to appoint somebody, and then they're going to kick on. At least that's the theory I'm going with.
One of your ex-players has scored the winning goal for Southampton tonight. Mr. Bree, Mr. Cheese himself.
Oh, nice.
Southampton
now, so they've got Camargo.
They have got some tough games coming up, Southampton, as well. Yeah. I mean, they've got Everton and Wolves, but then after that, they've got Liverpool, Brighton, Chelsea, Villa, and then Tottenham, all before Christmas.
If they haven't won a game by the end of the Everton and Wolves doubleheader, they're going to be in some serious trouble, I think.
That's just before that Wolves-Southampton game is the game just before the international break.
So if they've not won by then, I could maybe see.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to move on to the Ballon d'Or last night.
Yeah.
Won by Rodri. But was Vinicius Junior robbed? because I think some people think that he might have been robbed. I don't think he was. I think Rodri deserved to win it, to be honest with you. But there were some crybabies out there last night, especially the Real Madrid team, who didn't even bother going to the after getting pummeled 4-0 to Barcelona at the weekend, didn't turn up. And they won Team of the Year as well.
They did, and Ancelotti was Coach of the Year as well, and still in his acceptance social media post, he still had a dig and said something about Vinicius not winning it, or Carvajal not winning it, I can't remember who. But yeah, who thought people cared so much? I certainly
seemed to be a lot of Brazilian, of the Brazilian squad. I saw Ricardo Alisson Richarlison, he posted something. Lewis Hamilton posted something. Although he just posted a Brazilian flag and that was it. But
the F1 is in Brazil.
Yeah, I think people were taking that well out of context.
Yeah.
I think there was a few other Premier League players as well, Brazilian ones. But it's just,
I've just been so bitter about it. And
it's just really bad. It's like, I've never known anyone to get so, and I'm not sure if even hit is him. I think maybe it's just people that he knows. I think he tweeted something along the lines of, you know,
things like this will make him ten times
better or something. I don't know, but something that you would probably say had you just not won it. It was really strange how, because I know a couple of years back, you know, there was some things that, you know, Ronaldo and Messi were winning it when they probably didn't deserve to win it. And I could probably understand that, but I think I think the right person won it. And I think a lot of people would actually agree with that.
He's won the Euros with Spain this year. And he was a big part of that, although he got injured in the final. He went however many games it was without losing for Man City, 70 or something like that, which is pretty impressive. And let's be honest, Man City have been one of the best sides in Europe, okay?
Yeah.
They didn't win the Champions League last year, but yeah, they've been up there, right? So I get it. I get it completely right. And I think certainly if you were a team and you, but if say Man City lost Rodri, say if he retired tomorrow, more of a problem replacing him than Real Madrid would replacing Vinicius Jr. if he said he was going to retire tomorrow. Let's look at the difference of Man City when Rodri's injured and when he's fit, and look at the difference between Real Madrid when Vinicius is fit and he's not. Yeah, it says to me that Rodri's probably a lot more important. So, but it was, for me, it was just the fact that the club was sending out social media messages or letters and things like that. And I was thinking, I genuinely didn't think people cared so much. I thought it was like, you know, like Sports Personality of the Year. Like, it's a nice thing to have at the end of the year. That's about it. You know, no one really cares. I suppose, Ronaldo and Messi always had the rivalry for who's the best player in the world. So I kind of got that a little bit. But now they're both, you know, over the hill playing in the States and in Saudi Arabia. No one really cares anymore. And they're just so passionate about it. And I just think, what a stupid thing to get so worked up about. And they said in the Real Madrid team post, we've not shown up because we don't go where we're not appreciated. But yes, that's the kind of thing that a teenager would say.
Surely by them winning team of the year. Surely that's them showing appreciation of their team that they're winning. It's just
grown up though. These are adults, and then basically saying, I'm not going to your party if you're not going to, I don't know, give me a present. It's ridiculous. I just think it's too, and it's been making me laugh all day how people are taking it so seriously, to be honest.
Cole Palmer was on that list. He was 25th. Don't see me complaining that he didn't win it.
No, absolutely not. No, and you don't. There's no complaints here that Leon Bailey didn't win it either.
I think Phil Foden was the highest Premier League player other than Erling Haaland, who would have been in there anyway. I think he was 11th. Martinez is 18th. Odegaard 19th. Saka 21st. Ruben Dias 23rd. Saliba 24. Palmer 25. 26 Rice. And then randomly, joint 29th was Artem Dubrovnik.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. This is a bit random, but never mind. But anyway, they just came across as just crybabies, I think, if anything. So, and I'm glad Rodri won. And I'm glad that Messi and Ronaldo were nowhere near that final list as well.
Yeah. About time.
So yeah. Anyway, that's it for part one. In part two, we've got some Wonders of White, a quiz, and a Who Am I? Hello and welcome back to part two of this week's episode. And we're going to have some Wonders of White, Liam. They're back.
First one of the season.
The first one is actually about Rodri. And this is probably why, one of the reasons why he won the Ballon d'Or. So he's only lost one of his last 85 games for club and country. He's won 66 and drawn 18, and the only defeat he had was in the FA Cup final. In the last 85 games.
That is impressive, right?
Yeah.
That just shows how important he is.
I'm not having a go at Man United before anyone says it. Yeah. Right. Only Ipswich Town have been in the lead for less time in the Premier League than this season than Manchester United. Ipswich have only been leading a Premier League game for 47 minutes and 9 seconds, and Man United are 19th with 108 minutes and 5 seconds.
Wow.
Not
been good, has it? Yeah.
And that coincided, that stat was taken from Twitter roughly about an hour after you were sacked. next one is Chelsea related. I'm sorry. Moises Caicedo has the most combined tackles and interceptions in the Premier League this season with 48, while his per 90 average is 5.4. It's the highest by any Chelsea player in a single season since N'Golo Kante in the 2020-21 season.
There you go. Kante 2.0.
I mean, he's been one of our best players considered this season.
Yeah, he's had a good
season. Really good. Really suits the way that Maresca's playing as well. Next up, back to the Ballon d'Or. So Jude Bellingham is the first Englishman on the Ballon d'Or podium since Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard in 2005, when they come second and third. And at 21 years, 121 days, he's the youngest Englishman to do so since Duncan Edwards in 1957.
Wow, that's a stat for you, isn't it? Because I'm sure Michael Owen won it one year, didn't he? But maybe he was a bit older.
He must have been. Must have been.
Yeah. That's good going, though, to be fair.
That's this week's Wonders of White. You've got a quiz, I believe.
I do have a quiz. We've spoken about Ten Hag a lot. Well, actually, it's been quite Dutch heavy today, hasn't it? Because we've spoken about Van Dijk, we've spoken about Arne Slot, so this is quite appropriate. I thought I'd make a Dutch quiz special. So, 10 questions on Dutch-related stuff in the Premier League. I've got 10 questions. The last one is, there's plenty of bonus points up for grabs, but I'll explain that when we get there.
Right.
Are you ready, Chris?
Yes, I am.
Question number one. Which Dutch former player and manager famously lasted only 77 days and 4 league matches in his role as head coach of Crystal Palace?
That would be Mr. De Boer.
Which one?
Oh, you want me to name which one?
Yeah.
I will say it was, that's a good question. Is it Frank?
It is. Well, we'll give you the point for that, yeah. And that did basically ruin his career. He didn't really, he did have a spell in charge of Holland, but didn't last particularly much longer than
he lasted 78 days in that one.
And then he went out to Saudi Arabia, I think, something like that. So, yeah. Well done. 1 out of 1. Second question. Which Dutch player has the most appearances in the Premier League with 384? Now, I've got a hint for you, Chris.
Oh.
I will tell you the clubs he played for because it's quite difficult. you don't have that. So the clubs he played for are Coventry City, Aston Villa, Middlesbrough and Hull City.
Name them again?
Sorry, what was that?
What was the teams again?
Coventry City, Aston, Middlesbrough and Hull City.
Okay, so it's not Burkham. those, is he Dutch though? I think Coventry, Aston Villa, Middlesbrough, I think. Is he Dutch? Because it doesn't sound like a Dutch name. George Boateng.
Correct. Well done. That was quite a tricky one, to be fair.
It was the Villa Middlesbrough thing, that kind of.
Yeah, he is Dutch. Yeah, who would have thought of all the Dutch players in the Premier League, he's the one with the most appearances. But yeah, 384. excuse me, while I cough my guts up. Right. Question number three. Who was the first Dutchman to play in the Premier League?
Oh, my word.
A multiple choice for you.
Okay, go on then.
Hans Seegers, Ken Monku, or Pierre van Hooijdonk?
I don't think it's van Hooijdonk. I just don't think it's that one. I thought Hans Seegers, isn't he? He was goalie, wasn't he? Isn't he goalie?
Indeed.
I'll go for Hans Seegers because he's...
Correct. Why else would I include him? Yeah,
I was about to say, the other two I've actually heard of.
Yeah, he was quite old at the time, I think. He was at Spurs, and I think he played for Wimbledon for a bit as well. But yeah, first Dutch player in the Premier League. Question number four. Which of the following options is the top scoring Dutchman in the Premier League? Is it A, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink? B, Dennis Bergkamp? Or C, Robin van Persie?
Oh, I'm going to have to go van Persie.
Correct. Yes, 4 out of 4 so far. Quite a way clear. Dennis Bergkamp didn't actually score that many goals.
Yeah, Henri was scoring them all, wasn't he?
He was. So, 4 out of 4 so far.
Jimmy Hasselbaink, he was a good player for us. He was a great player for us.
Question number 5.
Yeah.
Who is the Premier League's first Dutch manager? I think you'll get this, but I do have a clue for you if not.
Well, I'm thinking. Well, I'll go with Ruud Gullit because I'm thinking he was probably 97, 98, and I can't imagine there was that many more before him.
You are correct.
Yeah.
The clue was going to be that he was a player manager at the time.
I mean, he didn't do particularly well. I'm not going to lie. He was definitely a better player than he was a manager.
Yeah, to be fair, he did better with you than at Newcastle, I think. I think he ruffled a few feathers when he went to St James's Park. But yeah, he was the first.
Didn't he bench Alan Shearer?
I think he benched and transfer listed him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looked like he was about to leave, but then obviously Shearer power meant Hullet left instead.
Yeah.
Right, question number 6. Which Dutchman has played for these Premier League clubs?
Oh, here we go. Go on then.
Newcastle, Norwich, Brighton, and Luton.
Ooh.
Kind of a who am I before a who am I on this one.
Name the teams again. Newcastle,
Norwich, Brighton, and Luton.
That is a tricky one, that one. In that order, is that an order or is that
that order, yeah.
Luton.
I thought that might help you a little bit.
It's the Luton one that's kind of thrown me. But then Norwich just sort of thrown me in. No, I don't. I don't know this one.
Give up?
I certainly do.
It was Tim Krul.
Oh yeah, no, I wasn't thinking goalie. Didn't have my goalie hat on.
No, obviously played a lot for Newcastle and Norwich.
Yeah.
And then Luton, but yeah, he was there at Luton last season.
It was Luton. It was the Luton bit that was fuzzing my brain.
I think he sat on the bench for most of the season, but. Yeah, he was there. talking of goalkeepers, which Dutch goalkeeper didn't concede a goal for a record 1,311 minutes?
I'm just, I'll go for just the obvious of Van der Sar. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it is the obvious, yeah. When he was at Man United. But I just forget what a good
goal. I was tempted to say Ed De Hooy, but
I was hoping I might tempt you, but sadly, no.
Never mind.
never quite made the clean sheet record that long. So, 6 out of 7 so far, so you're doing
well.
That's
not too bad, yeah.
Question number 8. Again, we've spoken about non-losing streaks. So, in March 2022, which Dutchman set a record for playing the most Premier League home matches without losing, that record being 60 games?
Oh, well, it's just going to be Van Dijk.
It is Virgil van Dijk, yeah. Well done. I thought that might be quite difficult, but...
I was just thinking of who sort of... He was bound to be a top four team, and he was just the one Dutch player that stood out.
Absolutely. So, yeah, 7 out of 8. So we're on question 9. Which Dutchman joined Manchester United in June 2015 for a reported fee of £25 million, leaving for Lyon 2 years later after scoring only 2 Premier League goals?
Depay.
It is indeed Memphis Depay. And I've just got here, side note, he has a music career. Might be worth checking it out, I'm just saying. He's released quite a lot of songs.
Has he got I'm pretty sure he hasn't even got a club at the moment, has he?
That is a good question.
I think he got released. Because he was at... Yeah, I think he got released, didn't he?
He is at Corinthians in Brazil.
Okay, so he's pretty much released then, yeah.
he's actually only 30, so it seems like he's been around a lot longer.
Seems like an odd choice of... Alright, yeah. Okay.
There you go. Right, bonus point time. Question 10. Okay. 8 out of 9 on the actual quiz. Mm-hmm. This one's just for you, Chris, because I know how much, obviously, that you love Chelsea and naming old Chelsea players. So, according to transfermarket.com, 14 Dutch players have represented Chelsea in the Premier League. I want you to name as many as possible. I'll give you 1 point for each, but as soon as you get one wrong, you will lose all your points.
Okay, I quite like this, because I think I'll be able to get... I reckon I can name... How many did you say there were?
There's 14.
Okay, maybe 10. I'm going to aim for 10.
I'll go
with the ones that we've already pretty much given me. So, Ruud Gullit is one of them.
Yeah.
And Ed De Hooy is the other one. I'm going to go with Mario Melchior.
Correct, that is 3.
I'm going to go with Iron Robin.
Correct, that is 4.
Zenden.
Correct, that is number 5.
I am going to go with Winston Bogard.
Correct, he didn't play many times.
No, he didn't. Can I have Ake, Nathan Ake? Can that count?
It can.
Very much. Mattson, obviously.
Yes.
With you guys now.
Now.
How many have I got now?
You've got 8.
Oh, Hasselbank. He was another one that we mentioned, wasn't it? That's 9.
Boyd. They do start getting a little bit.
I know one. Bullaroos.
Yeah, one that I didn't think you were going to get. Well done.
Terrible. I am now struggling. Van defender. Van Aanholt.
See, that is 11. There is someone else that we've actually just mentioned.
Oh, is there?
There is. One player that you've actually said, I know who that is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's gone blank.
Let me help you a little bit more. It was mentioned in the question, who was the first Dutchman to play in the Premier League?
Oh, Ken Monkey. All right, yeah. I'll give you that. All right, yeah.
So, yeah.
How many am I missing now?
You've got 12, so you've got 2 to get.
Well, anyone that I haven't mentioned isn't worth mentioning. Let me just tell you that.
Probably 2 of the most difficult ones.
Go on, then.
So you're going to stick on 12?
I was aiming for 10, so 12 is a win for me, yeah.
Nice. So the two you missed, Marco van Ginkel.
He was the serving
Chelsea player.
Yeah.
And then the other one was Jeffrey Bruma.
Right, yeah. Okay, yeah. Oh, Van Ginkel, I should have got that one.
Van Ginkel.
He was Vitesse's best player for about 9 years in a row.
Yeah, played for a long time for Chelsea without really ever playing for Chelsea too much. But he was injured for a long time.
All right, well, it's not too bad. I think I did quite maybe I'm part Dutch and I don't know about it.
There you go.
Right, I've got a who am I? It's retired player.
Okay.
These are the teams. This is the order as well. Napoli.
Okay.
Parma.
Yeah.
Inter Milan. Juventus.
Ooh.
Real Madrid. Back to Juventus. Before a short stint at Shabab Al Ahly.
Oh, that last one doesn't really help me too much.
Can't
be many players that have gone Juventus.
I've got clues. If you want clues in a minute, I can give you some clues.
I might need some clues, yes.
Okay, I've got the first clue is he has managed since retiring from football, and a couple of the teams he has managed is Guangzhou Evergrande, El Nasser, and China.
Brilliant. That doesn't help me all that much.
He's also made 136 appearances for Italy.
Oh, that might help me a little bit more.
Former Ballon d'Or winner.
He's a centre back, isn't he?
It might be.
It's Cannavaro.
It's Cannavaro, yes.
I just got sort of assumed he'd come through Juventus, I think. I didn't know
he started his career in Napoli. He was at Napoli for 4 years. Didn't break through straight away. But it was Parma where he made his big breakthrough. He spent 7 seasons at Parma playing 212 games before he moved to Inter Milan, and then he controversially moved to Juventus before leaving Juventus for Real Madrid, and then he gave that up for Juventus, and then he spent his last year at Shabab Al Ahly. He was assistant manager there for a season. He spent a year as the assistant at Al Ahly. He spent a year at Guangzhou Evergrande. He spent a year at Al Nasser. He spent a year at Tianjin Quanjin. He then spent 5 years back at Guangzhou before taking on, at the same time, he was manager of China. And most recently, he was at Benevento for a year and then Udinese last year, or earlier on this year.
So, yeah. He might have signed Keenan Davis.
He only scored 2 goals for Italy. And in 531 games, he only scored 16 goals in his career.
Yeah, never prolific, but he was a quality centre-back, wasn't he? Because he was never the biggest. He was never, like, the tallest, was he?
He was, like, 5 foot... I think he said he was 5 foot 9 or 5 foot 10, I think.
Just knew where to be.
encyclopedia, but a fantastic defender. But I did him because he is a previous winner of the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, good shout.
So yeah, but yeah, that's it for this week. Anything else, Liam?
Not this week.
Okay. We will be back next week.